Are you a healthcare organization struggling to achieve success? What if I told you that success not only depends on strategy, but also on the right mindset? At The Mindset Gap, their team of seasoned consultants understand the critical role mindset plays in achieving organizational excellence by empowering your workforce to think innovatively, embrace change, and adapt to new challenges. So imagine your workplace, one where your employees and patients thrive, where creativity and productivity go hand in hand, and where obstacles become opportunities. Don't let your organization fall into the mindset gap. Take the first step towards unlocking your potential today and email assist@themindsetgap.com with the referral code GenCan20 to schedule a consultation. Welcome to the Healthcare Provider Happy Hour. This is a safe space where we invite healthcare providers to unapologetically be themselves after the working day. My name is Jennifer George, and each week I will connect you with guests and stories that will help transform your stress to success and fulfillment. Are you with me? Grab your drink of choice and let's chat. Hey everyone, welcome to the Healthcare Provider Happy Hour. I'm your host, Jennifer George, and I'm joining you today with Michael Mojo. Michael is the mindset and mental performance coach for some of Australia's top rich listers, industry leaders, athletes, and business teams. Michael has been featured alongside the likes of Dr. Joe Dispenza and Gary Vaynerchuk. Through his events, programs, and coaching, Michael has guided tens of thousands of people to create change so they don't end up stressed out or burned out. And on this episode, we talk further about the ways in which we as healthcare providers can begin to enhance our mindset and live a more fulfilled life from within. This was a great conversation, one that you don't want to miss, and I think you'll continue to learn from and refer to. And, you know, with that being said, I do recommend you follow Michael's work. He shares how to contact him at the end of the episode, and we'll have that in the show notes. So let us know what you think of the episode and also share it with others in your network if you're thinking of them. Hi, Michael. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here and taking time out of your schedule to be here. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself? How did you end up, what inspired you to get into the mindset and performance space? And how did you end up working with healthcare professionals in this space as well?
Originally, I started off not being the smart kid at school. I love learning. So as a kid, I used to watch documentaries all holidays. So I would just watch documentaries. I've always been really inquisitive, but I didn't really fit into the school system that well. I got put in special classes. The word dyslexia had been thrown around. ADD back many, many years ago was thrown around. I just didn't really fit in there that well. My parents were quite young, so we would go away partying. They would go away partying every weekend. And we were just there for the ride. You know, we're the only kids because they were so young. They were 17 and 19. No one else had kids. So I grew up around adults. And so I was just really inquisitive. But as time went on, I got expelled from school, fell into this downward spiral of feeling depressed and wanted to end my life. Then I realized I had my first major realization in life. And that was that I can't please other people. My core priority in life is to just make sure that I'm doing what I need to do in life to enjoy myself and to enjoy life. So that was sort of my first realization around about 15. I went back to school. I kept studying as much as I could, still struggled through school, finished high school, didn't know what I wanted to do. I loved working on things because I just loved trying to figure out how things work. And so I went into the mining industry and I became a diesel mechanic or a diesel technician. And so I did a 3-year apprenticeship in that. But as I was going through my apprenticeship, I knew that I didn't want to be there. Most people were unhappy with their job. They were unfulfilled. They were making huge money. And, you know, in Australia, mining is one of our biggest resources. So there's just so much money to be made in that industry. So people would go away for 2 weeks on work, or it would be called 2 weeks on, 2 weeks off, or 2 weeks on, 1 week off. And then when they would come back, they were miserable. They would get home and they would complain about their wife. They'd complain about their kids. It was a male-dominated industry. So they would complain about their kids. they would complain that they weren't making enough money, but then they would get paid and go and spend all their money on new cars and jet skis and motorbikes. And they were just in this vicious cycle. Most of them would drink all the time. They'd use drugs. And I just didn't want to go back to that dark place when I was 15.
Mm-hmm.
So I started looking outside of the industry for something that I would enjoy. And I remember reading the newspaper one day and there was an ad and it said, become a personal trainer. The gym was the only place that ever made me feel good, because I had bright red hair as a kid. I had freckles. I was chubby. In grade five, I was the only kid who wore a t-shirt at the swimming carnival because I just didn't like my body. And so the gym made me feel good about myself. And I thought, you know, I want to go and share that with others and help. Now, 20 years ago, personal training was a joke of an industry. And so personal trainers were unqualified, almost jugheads that were either on steroids or they wore Lycra and jumped up and down on stage. And it was just a joke of an industry.
Right.
But I got into that industry wanting to help. So throughout my apprenticeship, after I'd started studying as a personal trainer, first of all, when I got into that environment, something opened up inside my brain. I started loving reading, and I'd never really read a full book from start to finish from when I was like a really young kid.
Mm-hmm.
And I just noticed that I wanted to read, I wanted to learn, I wanted to grow. And I became a straight A student, which was like the complete opposite of school. And so I was top of the class. I would ace almost every test. And then I got a phone call one day because my best friend, which was a reason why I didn't end my life when I was 15, he was the one person I thought of and how it would affect him. I got a phone call that he was in a car accident. And when I got to the hospital, he'd informed me that his three-year-old niece that we looked after quite a lot, he had an older sister, his three-year-old niece was killed in that car accident. Mm-hmm. And it sort of changed my whole entire life, because I realized life can just be taken away just like that.
Mm-hmm.
And so I kept thinking about, how am I going to be remembered when I'm not here? What's the purpose of my life? Why do I exist as an individual here for this short amount of time on this earth? You know, and it really sort of rattled me enough. And I think tragedy can do that. When you're off track, it can really rattle you to think way outside the box and mm-hmm. to have the courage to go do something different. So I ended up getting signed off my apprenticeship or my traineeship 1 year early. And I quit that day. And I just went straight to the gym that I trained at. And I said, look, I'll do anything. I'll clean toilets. I'll clean bathrooms. Just give me a shot. And so I started working in the personal training industry. And while I was there, my boss became my mentor. And so he helped quite a lot. Then within 2 years, I'm setting up a franchise system. I'm going out, I'm educating other personal trainers about the industry and human movement. And because I just studied so much, I just immersed mm-hmm. every weekend. My friends are out drinking and partying and I'm studying and reading books. And I started realizing the importance of mentorship. And so I became good friends with my physiotherapist, who then became one of my clients. Then I started working into the healthcare industry and the medical industry. What I didn't know then was that there was no real alignment between personal training and the medical industry in Australia. Yeah. Most medical professionals or healthcare professionals thought personal trainers were just a joke. And so I had to build these relationships because, first of all, I wanted to learn and I wanted the best for the client.
Mm-hmm.
So this happened over a period of time. I ended up getting headhunted to go work at a multinational gym chain. Did really well there. And then I got headhunted to go and work in a medical center.
Wow.
So I worked in a medical center for about 3 to 4 years, running my own business, doing physical rehabilitation, yeah. and also doing sports performance. And when I was in there, I realized that there were all these healthcare professionals that wanted the best for their clients. But I also noticed that there was a lot of tension between different healthcare professionals. You know, the physiotherapist didn't like the chiropractors, the nutritionist didn't like the naturopath, the psychologist, I think, had more mental health problems than her clients. Mm-hmm. And I was like, wow, this is mind altering. And the same people kept coming through the door. You know, it was almost like this cycle of sick people, just they were just almost in the same seat every week coming back. And I was going, what is going on? Like, everyone wants to help people, but why are they still here? Like, why aren't they getting the results?
Mm-hmm.
And one day I was talking to this big burly guy that looked like he rode for an outlaw motorcycle gang. You know, I'd spoken to him a few times before and he sat there and he said, Michael, you know, today they're getting me to see the psychologist or the psychiatrist because I've had back pain for like the last year and a half and it's not getting better. And so they think there's something wrong with my head. And it was like the first time that it clicked in my brain that what sits in between our ears is the most important factor to everything that we do as a human in life. When I say that, like if your body's breaking down, your mind's strong, that's a bit different. But most of the time, the way we think about our life, the way we think about our body, the way we live our values, the way we prioritize everything is essential to everything. And really, our whole of reality is based on our individual perception, and every individual has a different perception about life themselves. So I realized that this was this big filter mechanism that we have inside of our own brain that really helps us to live a great life or can destroy it. And so that's when I started getting into the mindset, the mental performance space. And then, you know, since then we've had all different types of people come to the events, but a lot of medical professionals as well. There are a lot of people out there who they do really well in the industry, but I know that there is a lot of medical professionals out there who have a really hard time managing money. Mm-hmm. And so they do really, really well in their career and they reach such a high level, but they struggle financially consistently because of their spending habits and the way that they think about money. Then there are other people who, you know, they love to learn and they love to grow, but maybe they have some mental blocks and things like that. Some people want to go and start their own practice, but have fear. So there's this consistent unblocking of the mindset that I think everybody needs, including, you know, healthcare professionals.
Absolutely. And so you're the person that kind of coaches them through that. And now, are you still personal training or are you now outside of that working more on the mindset aspect alone?
Yeah. So I mean, I started in the personal training industry 20 years ago. I got out of it about 13 years ago. I started running health and mindset events, like on weight loss.
Yeah.
And then eventually we've just steered the last 13 years just into mindset, mental performance. But only over the last couple of months, I had a mentor of mine. He said to me, why aren't you helping people? You know, not that I'm a dietitian and I don't pretend to be, but a lot of people do struggle with their eating. Mm-hmm. And so just those basic fundamentals of, you know, tracking your calories and making sure that your diet's on point, the basics of like get 5,000 or 10,000 steps per day in, make sure you keep moving. So I'm bringing that back into what I do.
Okay.
But that's only been a recent thing. So I guess I've found re-sparked that love for that industry.
I don't think it's quite gone away. I think if anything, yeah. It sounds like you've expanded it really. Even if you might not be doing the hands-on type care in a way. You touched on an interesting point about the healthcare professionals in the treatment space that you were working in at the time was that the dynamics were off. And, you know, one of the things that I've been sharing on this podcast is how important it is for us to serve people in the community, especially working, you know, in an outpatient type practice, is to kind of create like an integrated team environment. And it sounds like there was a lot of disconnect back then when you were practicing in that type of environment, which I also think influences, you know, patient care, especially right now. So interesting how you mentioned that. And I think that's also a big source of stress for us is the relationships within the workplace too, that we're in.
A lot of professionals that I know, it's something like in Australia, I don't know what it's like in the rest of the world, but in Australia, soft skills aren't taught. And so you have a lot of highly intelligent people who are very good at managing their own space and their own way that they operate. But taking that as a leader, because that's what leadership is, right? It's teaching other people how to operate more effectively and teach them the path. That can be really frustrating when you're an extremely driven person, you're extremely logical, you think through things effectively, and now you've got this potentially overweight person who's got mental health issues, who can't even do the basics of like just drink enough water throughout the day. Mm-hmm. And you know, maybe don't eat candy for dinner. That can be really frustrating. And that's why I think it's so important to control ourselves, because once you get into that stress state, the dynamics of the brain work completely different. And when emotions are high, intelligence is lowered. And so when people are under stress, especially healthcare professionals, it then becomes all isolated again. It's about us and our survival and the way we operate versus what's our purpose? Why do we get into this industry in the first place? Was it for the money? Was it for helping people? What was it?
Right, exactly. And that's one of the things that I encourage, you know, even myself and for others to reflect on is, especially when times get tough, like, why am I here? What is my purpose? And it sounds like what drove you back then to be learning and, you know, indulging as much knowledge as you can was to kind of help others and to make to feel useful in this life of, by being of service to others is kind of how it sounded to me. So I think we have to remind ourselves of that, but you're absolutely right. I think dynamically when things are off, we do become more siloed. And that's one of the struggles, I think, in healthcare and has long been for a long time, is that we tend to be pretty siloed. Even sometimes in a team environment, we still operate that way. So you kind of touched on that a little bit, but what are some common like mindset things that you notice or challenges that healthcare providers face when it comes to mindset or to chronic stress management?
I think it's the same for everybody. That is understanding what your, I call it the success map. Mm-hmm. It's what does your success map look like in your life? So my purpose in life is to help people perform better in life and business. So I don't like saving people who just want to drown themselves, because I think sometimes you can get pulled into that, especially as a healthcare provider or working in any field. Some people just love to suffer. Mm-hmm. It's unfortunate and you want to try and save them, but unfortunately, if someone's drowning, you have to have very specialized skills to save them, because if you're a surf lifesaver, the first thing that they teach you is if someone's drowning, don't save them. Let the surf lifesavers do it, because they're trained. Because someone who's drowning grabs you and they use you as a buoyant, something that's buoyant, and mm-hmm. they'll push you under and they'll essentially drown you to save their own lives. Mm-hmm. That can happen quite a lot in, any industry. And it can happen with family as well. Like someone you love and care about, they're drowning. You might throw your money, into them to try and save them and help them. And the next second you've collapsed everything around you. Yeah. But that happens quite a lot in the healthcare industry. You've got these people who care about others. They can take things personally. It can affect you mentally and emotionally. Sometimes you just see these people who just choose to suffer over and over and over again. They're just always looking for a quick fix and they're not going to put in the work. That can be extremely tough. Mm-hmm. That's why I avoided staying in that industry and went out on my own, because I get to choose my clients. For mm-hmm. a lot of healthcare providers, they don't choose their clients. Their clients come to them depending on the space that they're working in.
Right.
But you've got to be really clear on what your success map looks like. And so I talk about three key pillars. The first one is fulfillment. I've studied thousands of people now who are at the top of their game. People who tend to achieve great things are in the game for a long time. And the way that they do that is they love doing what they do. They'll take the adversity, they'll take the hard knocks, but they take the good times as well. People who don't want the adversity, they will avoid that at all costs. And when times get hard, they'll give up. So we have to understand, first of all, what our core values are. And our core values of an individual is based on a field of study called axiology, which is sort of a cross-link between economics and philosophy. And it talks about two key important questions. Where do I add the most value to society in an economics term? And then also, where do I perceive I'm the most valuable? Where do I get the most value? So for me, it's teaching, learning, and coaching. Economically, I earn better money than the average by crazy amounts, but that's because I love what I do and I wouldn't do anything else. It's all I think about is learning, teaching, and coaching. It's like on my brain 24/7, but that's what makes me highly skilled and highly competent in this area. So you have to find your core values, which are things that you prioritize, think about, and do regularly. So they're not words like kindness and compassion. They're not true values. They're social idealisms, and they get crossed quite a lot. So you've got to go back to your core values about what makes you unique. Why do you love doing what you do? And would you do that thing even through the hardest times? That's number one of the core pillar of fulfillment.
Okay.
Then you have a life purpose, which is why you do that. So for me, I love helping people perform better in life and business. That's my purpose. The way that I do that is through my values, which my highest value is teaching, learning, and coaching. Mm-hmm. High value connections is number two. Business and wealth creation is number three. And then personal performance is my fourth. So the way that I live my purpose is through my values.
I'm assuming they evolve, or they can change over time.
Yeah, they tend to evolve. It really comes down to there's different theories on this. So part of a theory is that we're partially given our values from our parents at the point of conception through epigenetic tagging. Then you've also got, I guess you could say, epigenetics in utero, and the way that the mother perceives the external world and her hormonal influence. Then when the child comes out, it's creating its own perception of the world. So its challenges, its voids, its sense of missingness, its environment, all of those things are heavily influencing the child's values. Now, it used to be thought that values were created or given from a parent to the child, but that's more of a religious or a belief structure more than is a value structure. I have a niece and nephew, and watching them grow up and understanding values at a very high level, seeing them both be in the same family, in the same environment, they're two completely different people with two completely different values.
Right, that
My
makes
nephew is he can't sit still. He's like myself, my dad, and my brother-in-law. We're both like ADHD off the scale. We have to move, we have to do things. And so for him, he can't sit still. So he struggles at school. But you give him anything to do with sports, exercise, running around, he just has to move and he's fantastic at it. But he also loves building. So from a young age, he would grab a hammer and nails and start nailing things together and building stuff. And he can sit there for hours and build things. He just can't sit there at school and learn from a teacher who's just talking to him. He has to move. So his value structure is very easy to see. He also has a high social aspect. So we were out only a couple of months ago for my dad's birthday, or my father, and he's 10 years of age. We were at a bar, and it was for dinner. He knew about six or seven adults. They would walk past him and go, "Mum, there's da da da." And then the next second he's like, "Hey, Mum, there's da da." And these are all adults. He knew way more people than any of us there. And
That's
it's like, how
awesome.
does this kid know everybody?
That's
But it's
so
because he
awesome.
talks to everybody.
Right.
He literally just walks up to people and talks to them,
And he
and he
remembers
remembers their
them.
name.
Yeah. Very impressive.
Whereas my niece is almost the opposite. She's very creative, so she goes and gets changed. She'll have five outfits change, like changes while there's people at the house. She has a close value on family, so she'll spend time with family. But when there's large groups of people, she'll isolate more and she'll sit next to family really close. So my nephew is very social, so he's got a high value on social connection, whereas my niece is more family. She's high value of creativity. She'll sit there and draw and color and she'll do creative stuff, but she doesn't really care about running around and playing and all that stuff. She would rather do creative. So these are values that that they're both expressing from a young age, and you'll see it in any child, but
Right.
adults are the same.
And it's kind of like along the way we disconnect from that. In your case, you kind of had the foresight and also like the realization, with how you were feeling as a teenager and stuff. But I do find that I think that's where society's influence and the expectations of others then starts to influence kind of what we think we value or who we think we are, who we, need to be, or what success looks like for us, right? But can you tell us about that third pillar?
Just on what you said there, there's something, and this is the way I designed all of my courses. When I read Sigmund Freud's work about implanted values, that changed everything for me. Because it's not that we don't know who we are, it's just that we spend our entire lives trying to free ourselves from the opinions, the judgments, and the criticisms of others through the implanted values. And so that's happened from when we're a little kid. And that happens due to controlling our impulses and our fears as a child. But Michelangelo, supposedly when he released or launched the Statue of David, someone asked him, they said, "How do you carve such amazing sculptures?" And they pointed to David, the statue, and he said, "It's easy. All I do is I chip away the rock that's not David." And that gave me an insight into why I needed to be different in this space, because most other people teach people how to be successful, how to achieve things. But the thing is, I learned that every person is successful. The problem is that it's all the implanted values that put all these expectations, the beliefs, the ideas, the ideals. And so people go to make a decision and they go, "I really want to do this, but," and then there's all these implanted values that pop up. "Oh, I don't want to disappoint mom and dad. I don't want to let this person down. What's this person going to say? Am I going to be judged? Does the industry respect it?" And so now they have all these clouded ideas and it stops them from taking action. The more that they do that, the more their self-worth lowers because they're not living their values. And values and worth are the same thing. So when we don't live our values, our self-worth drops. When our self-worth drops, we get involved in more destructive behaviors and impulses, and we live more in fear. And so it creates these emotional volatilities that most people live by. Then they can start to use vices, and then their life becomes more self-destructive. So what I've found is there's a direct correlation between how much someone is self-destructive and how much they try to people please others or live with implanted values. So clarity is the key. The third step on the first pillar. So that's pillar one is values, purpose, and then lifestyle balance. Your lifestyle balance needs to be balanced in a way that you can meet your values and serve your purpose. So I work 70 to 100 hours a week and I love it. I wouldn't do anything else. Most people say you work too much, but for me, that's my comfort zone. That's where I operate best. Mm-hmm. But I train for like an hour to 2 hours a day as well. I guess I can sometimes throw that into work because I train with clients and so on. Mm-hmm. But because I love what I do, my time is structured where it looks like I'm working all the time, but I actually really enjoy what I do. Other people say, well, I need to have a work-life balance, but I don't know what that means because you've got life and then you prioritize things in life that are valuable to you. And mm-hmm. should you do that, you win in life. Versus there are a lot of people like in Australia where they go, well, I work for 8 hours, so therefore I need 8 hours off outside of work. But that's not really the way we should structure life because it mm-hmm. depends on your values. So that's pillar one is fulfillment. They're the things that first pillar will make you fulfilled consistently. Then the second pillar is drive. So with your drive, that comes down, your drive comes from your direction and that comes from your visions, which keep popping up in your mind consistently. So we all have visions about our future. We need to document and record them and then we turn them into a mission. So my mission is to help people perform better in life and business. Very similar to, it's I build businesses that help people perform better in life and business. So now I'm starting to branch out and build more businesses in the healthcare space. There's certain things that I'm doing in that space. There's other things as well that I'm doing in the business world because it all comes back to the long-term mission of building these companies that can help people perform better in life and business. So that's a long-term mission. And then my vision keeps giving me these visualizations of the future on what I'm trying to build and where I'm heading. If we do that well, then we get clarity on goals, makes goals a lot easier. We tend to not self-sabotage as much or self-destruct.
Mm-hmm.
That's pillar number two. And then pillar number three is performance psychology. I'm not into positive thinking. I don't believe that it works. I think that it's relative. When someone's very negative and they're very disempowered, positive thinking is great because they have to learn how to build that other part of themselves. But we've all met highly optimistic people that think that everything's going to go well and keep making stupid decisions because they're highly optimistic all the time and they don't look at the downsides. I think if you look at chemistry, you've got the noble gases. They're stable, right? They've got a stable outer shell with their electrons. So they're noble because they're balanced and they're stable. So balanced and stable people tend to be the most noble. They're the smart ones. So do we want to have positive charge? Do we want to have a negative charge? Well, if you look at all other fields of study outside of psychology, a positive attracts a negative in order to stabilize. Everything comes back to stability in nature. Everything's trying to go back to its most stable format.
Right.
So then how do we create a psychology and an emotional state that's most stable so that we can execute effectively on those first three key pillars? And so there are things that I teach around mental and emotional balancing. There's some tools that I've created that took me years to study and research and piece together. But we really want to think about the greatest thing that we can do is to be stable enough to keep driving towards our mission because that's where our greatness is. And then we need to use the positive and negative charges. Sometimes we need a bit of negativity in order to create the drive and the anger and the ambition. And we get frustrated with ourselves enough in order to act when we're scared. And then there's other times where we need to think a little bit more positively, where we can see that even in the bad times, we can work through it all and so on. But it's almost like a pendulum. And, mm-hmm. When we go back and look at ancient philosophy, which I've also studied a lot of, all these great philosophies talk about this idea of like yin and yang, can't have dark without light. And mm-hmm. they mention this term called love. When we do what we love, we embrace both sides. Like if you've got kids, they're your greatest gift, but also your biggest nightmare as well at the same time. That's true love.
Yeah.
True love embraces both sides of something and you'll take it as it is.
It's a whole.
Versus passion is one side without the other. And so when people chase their passions, the original etymology of the word passion means to suffer. Mm-hmm. And that's why the great texts always talk about avoiding the passions, because people do things when it's good, but they'll freak out and they won't do it when it's tough.
right now, like if you think about the healthcare space, when you think about providers who are burned out, there are some who are burned out and there's some who aren't, right? Like you said, there's always this podcast tends to focus on, maximizing and maintaining and sustaining the well-being of healthcare providers, knowing that there are good moments and then there are challenging ones, right? It'll never be perfect and it won't always be positive, right? But we're always just trying to bring ourselves back into stability and serving our mission and our purpose from within, right? And expressing that on the outside. And so for us, like if you think about us and where we're at today with burnout and moral injury, and a lot of those could be, differences in values maybe. But what do you think is kind of the source of that disconnect right now in healthcare where people are struggling?
I think there's a few different things. So Einstein said adversity exposes the man to himself. And so I think when we go through these times of challenge or crisis or burnout or things like that, the first thing that we have to do is to go back and look at what we can control. So bring it back into the locus of control, right? I can't control anybody. I can't control my partner. I can't control my kids. Not that I have kids, but people who are listening, if you've got kids, you can't control anybody. You can control yourself and then you can influence others. But our ability to influence is directly correlated to how well we manage ourselves. So what we want to do is the healthcare industry is tough because you've got the influence of governing bodies, you've got, political issues. Then you've got, if you work in a medical center, then there's, investors and it's just healthcare providers and professionals get pulled in so many different directions. It's so tough to even be yourself and maybe to even have a personality. Okay. Because most healthcare professionals that I'm friends with outside of work, they're a different person than inside of work. They like lose every part of themselves when they walk in those doors. So I think it's important to bring it back to that locus of control. What can I control? I can control my health if I'm burnt out. Do I have to improve my diet? Do I need more sleep on weekends instead of going out and doing stuff all the time and trying to make up for stuff? Is the partying and going out on weekends with friends and family, what's my priority based on my values? For me, I tend to spend more time relaxing and sleeping and chilling than I do hanging out with people outside of work hours because of my purpose and my mission in life. So if I can get rest, I'm taking rest every time. So I think that's also important. Then you can look at other factors that you can influence. Okay, do I anything that you value, you invest in. So I meet people all the time and they say, I want to grow my business. And I say, invest in learning from people, like get mentors, get coaches. Oh, they're expensive. Yeah, they'll go and buy in Australia, they'll go and buy an $80,000 or a $90,000 car. Yet they'll invest like $0 in themselves after they're qualified. And then they wonder why other people like myself, who I've invested well over $1 million on studying and learning and traveling all around the world to find people smarter than me. They wonder why someone like me absolutely annihilates them in business. But it's because we invest in things that we value. So make sure you're investing in the right place. Invest in you. Keep growing mentally, emotionally. Health is important. Your family, whatever is important to you, invest in those things because the things that we invest in, we value. But also the things that we invest in tend to appreciate and go up in value. So the greater we can appreciate ourselves, the more we're probably going to appreciate our clients and people around us. We've all probably been in times where we've made mistakes and we're tired and we're burnt out. And so we're not appreciating ourselves and the negative self-talk kicks in. The next second, we're not appreciating our clients. We're not appreciating our career. And so it depreciates and it starts to collapse in itself.
And I think it's important to even in addition to that is even just re-reflect on those things, like looking at our values, looking at our mission, looking at what fulfills us. Those things take actual energy and work to do. And I think sometimes, like you said, we get stuck and caught down that rabbit hole that we don't think that we can start from the ground up again in just kind of realizing our purpose again and reevaluating those pillars that you talked about and then, building from there. Where can people connect with you so they can learn a lot more?
You can go to michaelmojo.com. That's my website. There's a whole bunch of stuff on there. If you type in Michael Mojo on any social media platform, you'll come across me and find me. I'm highly active on Instagram. So if anyone's out there and you've got questions or you want to send love or hate, whatever, just hit me up on Instagram.
Awesome. Thank you so, so much for being here. Thank
you for pleasure. Your time. Thanks for having me.
So if you guys like this podcast, please subscribe and leave an honest review. Your feedback means everything to me. Your reviews are what moves this podcast forward, and I always appreciate receiving them. If you want to get a hold of me directly, reach out to me on social media. My handles are in the show notes. And you can always subscribe to my weekly newsletters at jennifergeorge.co so that we can stay connected. So until next time, thank you guys so much again for your ongoing support.